Time now here on RNIB Connect Radio to find out all about the private life of public transport, a new immersive art installation by artist David Van Eessen, which not only gives a viewpoint on what life is actually like for us all as visually impaired people, but also in a way, through the immersive experience, opens up the doors on what others might think of as a private life for us all. I'm delighted to say that David joins me now to tell me a little bit more about the private life of public transport. Hello, David, and welcome to RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, Toby. Thank you for having me.
David, firstly, would you tell me where the sort of idea and starting point for the private life of public transport came from and how the RNIB got involved and helped you with this fantastic immersive art installation?
Well, like a lot of pieces, and particularly for me, work begins mysteriously. About a year ago, I found myself scanning a number of objects and places in London using photogrammetry. And I was drawn to a bus that was in a siding, and there was nobody in the bus at the time. So the lights were still on there. I was curious to see it standing there like that, no driver, just all the lights on, and about 10 or 11 o'clock at night. So I decided to scan it, and I was drawn to this image, and I put it into virtual reality and had various ideas around it, but I really couldn't figure it out. And over time, I started to record voices that were friends of mine recorded their secrets, and there were these sort of confessions. And again, it didn't really work, and I didn't really understand it. And then I started to look at it perhaps in a different way. I've been caring for an elderly relative whose sight has been failing. And for some reason, it must have got under my skin in some way. And I realized that this piece was about invisibility. And in fact, that the voices of people who were non-sighted might be the right collaborators on the project. And the more I thought about it, the more that made sense. I contacted the RNIB, and they were kind enough to put me in touch with people, I think, through the Connect and Facebook network who volunteered to be part of the project. And these voices are contained within floating spheres, which you discover, but the voices themselves are arranged spatially within a large environment at the center of which this uninhabited bus sits. And as I started to do these recordings, and it was a phenomenal experience for me because I was learning as I was recording and learning about my own work that I was making, but I was also learning about the experience of not having sight or losing your sight. And it was powerful and moving for me. And I started to think, well, actually, this experience, because the voices are placed spatially, could be accessible to people who didn't have sight in virtual reality, and that would be something really new, so both sighted and non-sighted people could experience it.
And obviously, as you say, you interviewed a number of blind and partially sighted people. What sort of questions were you asking them, and what sort of responses did you get from them?
Well, there were a couple of warm-up questions, because my third question was the most important one from the perspective of making the piece. I asked, what was the experience of not being sighted or losing your sight? And we had a really informative discussion with each of the people about that. And then I asked, so what would you tell sighted people about being non-sighted? What would you want them to know? And that was a very interesting discussion. The final question was, how do you dream? And if you were sighted before, have your dreams changed? And if you were not, what is the sensation of dreaming for you? And those are the recordings that I used in the piece.
So in a way, very much sort of, I suppose, I wouldn't say imaginary experience, but very much sort of another experience, the sort of non-worldly in a way, perhaps.
Yes, and that's perhaps the truer experience, because it's not the thought experience as much as the felt experience. It's the unconscious experience. And I think that, for me as an artist, is the thing that's most interesting in my own process, is why did that bus interest me? Something in my unconscious told me that there was a hidden message, and it was a message I was going to have to discover over time, which I did. But also, I think, for an audience, for people coming to this, they're going to connect emotionally. And I think people feel, particularly in an interview, they feel freest to speak about their emotional life, particularly to somebody who they don't know, when they talk about their dreams. And so the dreams are an access point into these very emotional stories, which every one of the interviewees told.
And I believe there were some sort of quite interesting experiences that people had through their dreams. And how have those all been sort of, taken and brought to life through Vajo and their sort of work that they do with immersive and sort of mixed reality hardware and software? How have they been able to bring that to some form of, I suppose, type of life, or, you know, sort of bring it to life in some way through the installation?
So spatial audio is a really interesting way of interacting with a volume, in other words, not a two-dimensional image, but a three-dimensional environment. Because, you know, if the rain falls, we can hear which direction the rain is falling and what it's colliding with. We can, in a sense, feel where sound is. We don't have to see in order to navigate a volumetric environment. We can use sound as it gets louder, as it thins, as it's altered by other factors. And the goal of this, because it is an audiovisual experience, was to drive the viewer through a sighted viewer, through both image and sound, and a non-sighted visitor to the experience could use sound, and to make the sound as rich as possible, there were a number of things that we did. The bus itself is surrounded by water. You're in the middle of a dark lake, but you don't know this until you start to move. So with a controller, as you start to move around the space, you can hear the water. You can hear the rippling of the water as you move. And you can hear voices mixed in the distance. But as you get closer towards these spheres, the sound becomes slightly louder. And as you enter the sphere, the sound is isolated and you are in the testimony of each of the interviewees. And what's on the outside of the sphere, you hear about 10% of, and 90% of the sound then becomes the statements and the recollection of dreams. And I think what makes it really interesting is that I didn't do a lot except edit those things into the clearest, most concise version of what I was told. Because I want those experiences to be conveyed as truthfully as possible. And when people go through a space and encounter these voices, I want them to feel that those voices are speaking directly to them, just as they were speaking directly to me.
And I suppose in a way it's a bit like how you're describing that experience that everyone's going to be getting when they actually go and sort of go into this in as it is in the space where it's being displayed at the moment. It's very much as if you are, in a way, sort of walking on a bus. You're not necessarily on a physical bus, but you're actually walking through somewhere where there are conversations, and you're sort of in a way eavesdropping, but then going into that conversation and then, you know, sort of tapping into that person's life in a way.
Yeah, that's right. And what occurred to me in the process of making all of this was, these were the voices of the missing passengers. These are the voices of the unseen. These are the voices of the invisible. And once again, that idea of invisibility rhymed with the notion of working with people who had lost their sight. Because, of course, it's not just the invisibility of the visual world. It's the invisibility of people who are non-sighted by people in the sighted world. So there's a kind of connection there that started to become quite poignant for me. And I was thinking, well, I don't usually make pieces about social issues, but this is becoming one, naturally. Because embedded in this idea is that we can't see something. One of the interviewees and I don't think I'm ruining it for anybody, but she told me an extraordinary story. She told me that she co-parents a child, a young child, with her ex-husband, and I think the child is living with the husband most of the time. And she dreamed that she went to see the child, and she could see the house in which the child lived, but she could no longer see her daughter. And that idea for me was incredibly powerful, and it spoke to this idea of invisibility, which echoed through the piece in some way.
And as well as the immersive virtual reality experience and mixed reality experience, there is a sort of tactile element to it all. And I think what might be termed as Braille wallpaper is around for people to explore as well.
Yeah, so I wanted to do something with the space in which the installation is set. So, you know, when you do a virtual reality installation, essentially the installation is inside your head. It's in headsets and headphones that you're wearing. And we have these plinths on which the devices rest. But apart from that, we're in an empty room. And so it occurred to me at the time that, again, this idea of the unseen and the invisible reared its head. And I thought, well, what if we were to coat the inside of the room or a substantial amount of it in Braille? And use the transcripts for the embossed Braille pages. So take everybody's words and put them on the wall. And I think when most people would walk in, they won't notice that it's Braille necessarily. But as they go closer, they'll see that there's something there. And that's that same idea that if we look closer and if we examine the world around us, we begin to detect things and to understand things better. I'm also using some screens, LED glass screens, which reflect the audience, and they have the Braille traveling over the face of the screens. So what a sighted person would see is themselves with Braille over them. And what a non-sighted person would experience is that the entire wall is covered in language.
Wow. David, what would you like both sighted and visually impaired people to come away with from experiencing the private life of public transport?
I think their connection, because I have described this to people as an experience that allows us to see, if you'll allow me to use that word for a moment, I'll explain why I'm saying that, allows us to see each other more clearly. The language around not seeing is the same language we use for seeing. And I have been thinking about another word, a word that's correct for both groups, and that is discovery. Discovery. We discover each other. And I want sighted people through this experience to recognize people who are non-sighted as what I've described as a prismatic version of themselves. That we are the other person. There is no difference between us. And I think it's incredibly important to create a kind of discovery or recognition that we share a world together. And that idea of equal access is not something imposed on sighted people or abled people. It's something that you would expect to have for everybody in the world when those people are a reflection of you. And for non-sighted people, I'd like to create something where they recognize themselves, where they feel that they're heard, where their voices exist in a way that are as valid and as meaningful as any sighted person's voice. I talked to David Blunkett, and, you know, David Blunkett, almost at one extreme, has had an extraordinary life. But the way in which he told his story, again, I found very emotional, because when he spoke just as an ordinary person. And that's how everybody, guest or participant, should really see the other, as a version of ourselves, as a person just like us. So I think for both groups of people, to not see themselves as separate groups, but to actually see themselves as part of one system that is interconnected.
Do you think the private life of public transport could, in a way, maybe go on tour or maybe a different or similar installations in other places across the world to give a sort of, you know, give people an insight into life as a vision impaired person?
Well, I would love it if that could happen. And, you know, obviously we'll see how this goes and see what the response is. But I can imagine it on a larger scale, and I can imagine it in other places. And I think it might continue to evolve in some way, because it might be that if you did it in America, for instance, you might want to localize voices, or you might want to introduce people to those people around them. I mean, part of what's been great about doing this in the UK is that the voices of Britain from Scotland and from Northern Ireland and from England have created a kind of topography of the non-sighted, you know, which makes it very real for people living here. But in another place, perhaps the voices might be different. Not that I don't love the voices I have, I do. We could tour them, but not everybody understands the way we speak in other countries. So you could do it in another language. You could do the non-sighted in China. So what is the fundamental idea? It's that we're communicating to each other through art. And maybe in that sense, the piece does have the ability to travel.
If you are in London during the Frieze Art Festival, which is on from the 11th to the 15th of October 2023, you will have the opportunity to experience the private life of public transport at the Virtual Ghost, which is on East Castle Street in London. And you will have to book a place, a slot to actually experience the experience from 2 p.m. to 8 p.m. each day. And for more details about the experience and how to book your slot, please do visit the following website, which is bit.ly/private life of public transport. And that is bit.ly/private life of public transport, all one word. Well, David, thank you very much indeed for joining me here on RNIB Connect Radio and telling me more about the private life of public transport, which sounds like a fantastic experience that I think everyone should experience.
Thank you, Toby, for having me. And I obviously welcome all members of the community to come and dip their toe in this virtual reality experience.